The Hard Shoulder on Newstalk.
With Nissan Subscribe and Drive. No deposit, no compromise, no fuss. Find out more at nissan.ie.
Let's talk now, though, about the government and other plans they have. Plans to expand the summer programme places for young people with special needs. A proposal was brought to Cabinet today on this front. Josepha Madigan is Minister of State with responsibility for special education and inclusion and joins me now. Minister, what can you tell us about this?
Thank you, Ciarán. I'm delighted to be able to announce this today. And it's a really significantly expanded programme, and I hope also a significant boost to families who have children with special needs. So every year there is a summer programme which takes place in schools throughout the country. But this year, it's going to be eligible for about 81,000 students. Now, that's four times the amount that would have taken part last year. We've also doubled the amount of investment to 40 million. And the reason why we're doing this is because we all know how difficult COVID has been, but it's been particularly difficult for children with special needs, as you can imagine, and when you're talking about regression and the loss of key skills. And I suppose as the very first Minister for Special Education, I wanted the families to know that the government does care and that we do care about their children and that we do want to try and assist as much as we can. We're also adding on an additional week where some schools can provide the programme from between 2 and 4 weeks, but there's also an option to do 5 weeks. And the other thing that we did, which will help schools, is we are saying that they don't have to hold it in July. They can do it in August if that suits them better. So there's some flexibility around that. So there were a number of measures that we worked out with the schools just to make sure that we, you know, can maximise the amount of schools that participate in this, because it is voluntary, and also to make sure that we get enough staff and that there's a willingness of the school management to do it. So there's no reason, when we've gone through the list of issues that they had, there was an issue around administrative burden, so we've sort of streamlined that for them, the funding. We've got final year students that can participate in the scheme, the timing, as I said, and there's a helpline there as well. So there's no reason why those 81,000 children won't be able to participate in it. And I think it'll really help families this summer.
Is this for children in any school? Can any school apply to run these, or is it only so-called special schools or schools with dedicated units?
There are 4,000 schools in the country, and every single one of them can apply for it. It is eligible. So the people who can participate in it are any child in a special school, any child in a special class, and any child with a complex need in a mainstream class. And they will be readily identifiable by the school themselves. So we've really expanded that, whereas last year, no child, for example, in a mainstream class, even with a complex need, could participate, whereas now they can. So we're really calling on obviously families to if they wish, for their children to avail of it. I think it's a benefit to them to go into the school themselves. There is a home-based programme as well, but we seem to get a lot of good feedback about the school-based programme. And we're also calling upon schools who may in the past have been reluctant because it's a voluntary, as I said, and the fact that we're putting more funding into it this year and we've taken out some of the issues that they had, I hope that will encourage them to participate in it also.
You mentioned yourself that children with acute needs and with additional needs have been more impacted by COVID than many of their peers in terms of regression. What other supports are going to be available to them going forward beyond the summer placement programme?
Oh, we've continued supports all the time, and we'll be looking now post COVID to see how we can enhance that. There's a 2 billion going into special education, which is 1/5 of the entire education budget, and again, that's an acknowledgement of the precedence and the priority that children with special needs are. I'm looking myself, obviously, at special class places. I think, Ciarán, I may have spoken to you before about that. We'll have 1,200 special class places now for this September. And you know, there are a number of different programmes that I'm looking at.
How many places, 1,200 this September, how many places were there last September? How much of an increase is that?
I think it's grown from about 235% since 2011. So if you think of 2011, from memory, we had about 548 places. And I know that because I was in the Shannon this morning, we have 1,865 places. So, you know, that's quite significant. So we're continually trying to ensure that every child gets a place in a school or indeed in a class. And the fact that we have now a forecasting model, and the fact also that every school has given a commitment to add additional facilities as an automatic factor when they're building a school is something I think to be commended.
Yeah, and those 1,300 kids who've been accommodated in that time frame between the 548 and the now 1,800 plus, them and their parents will welcome that investment and that resourcing. Still, though, we hear, and we hear on this show all the time from parents who say this coming September there won't be a place for, or they'll be expected to travel long distances, an hour and a half, 2 hour round trips, or they'll be told, you know what, there will be a place, but it might be in 2 or 3 years, by which time little John or Mary is 6 or 7 years old going into junior infants. They already have uphill challenges. It doesn't help being that much older than all the other kids in the class. What is going to be done to expand that number in the coming years?
Yeah, so first of all, there are a number of issues there. You know, the transport one, obviously there is transport that is available to children with special education needs who can't, you know, for some reason get to a school themselves. And there's obviously grant funding that is there as well. And that, by the way, applies to this summer provision also. But there are some children who avail of that during the year. But, you know, the special class places, I obviously have a mechanism under the Education Act under Section 37A, but I very reluctantly use that, and I only use that in circumstances where the National Council for Special Education can't actually get the places themselves. The forecasting model, to me, which hadn't been done before, is the crux of this and is the critical part, because when you're talking about schools in general, and as I said, there's 4,000 schools and there's about 124 special schools, there is a geographic information system there where you can look into the future in 10 years' time and see, you know, how many children are going to be living in a certain area. And to my mind, there's an argument to say that we should be doing that for children with special needs as well, if not more so. So
we don't do that at the moment for children with special needs.
We
only look at it in terms of just overall demographics, the number of children.
Exactly,
we don't say
X
percentage will have acute needs and will need SNAs or a unit or whatever it happens to be.
Exactly. So that's been done at present. And that together,
when are we going to start doing that? As you said, we don't do it. When are we going to start doing that?
No, because that's since I came in, the building and planning unit and the NCSE have been working on that model. And I'm hoping to make sure that that's done over early course. It is one of my priorities, and it hadn't happened before. But what I have already secured, and when I came in situ into this position, is that commitment from the building and planning unit that every single school from 2021 will automatically provide SEN facilities. That is a massive undertaking, but it's something that should have been done many years ago, but at least it's being done now. So that this conversation that you and I are having, we shouldn't be having in a matter of years, because there will always be a place for a child with special needs, and to my mind, they you know, the Constitution does say that education is a right, but it has to be vindicated as such. It doesn't actually stipulate that a child, and even children without additional needs, is to have a place in their locality. But obviously, we always endeavour to do that, and because it's much easier, particularly when you have a child with special needs, you want to have them in an environment where it's accessible for them. And you know, many children with special needs, they like continuity, they like routine, and they like to know where they're going. And if it's too far away, it can be, you know, traumatic for them.
One listener's texted in to say this announcement, it'll make no difference to lots of families with children with special needs. For example, our school never participates in this programme. What do you say to schools who don't want to participate and don't?
Yeah, and this is what I was saying earlier on. So we sat down with the schools and tried to ascertain from them, these are the schools now that didn't participate, why they didn't participate. And some of those reasons that were outlined to us was the administrative burden. So we have streamlined that. They talked about flexibility, you know, July or August, we've sorted that out. They talked about specific CPD. We have given that. They looked for a helpline. We are giving that. And we also, they wanted assistance and guidance around final year students, and we've given them that. So as far as the department is concerned, there is no reason why schools shouldn't participate, but it is voluntary. And I would ask them, and I'd make a call out in this programme for them to come in and avail of this. But obviously, the school decides at the end of the day, and a lot depends on the availability of staff and the willingness of school management.
And the availability of staff, you mentioned it there. I was just about to bring it up because someone has texted in, where are the staff going to come from for the programme this year?
Well, it's voluntary, so you can't force somebody. But what we have tried to do is take away any barriers that may be there for schools or indeed staff. And we've doubled the funding to 40 million. And that funding will be given in advance. So the schools, I hope, will be in a position now that we have the vaccine rollout. Well, you know, last year, I think schools are probably a bit more tense than they might be this year. The fact that the vaccination program is doing so well.
Because before I let you go, I wanted to bring up the ESRI report today. I know you'll have been aware of some of the coverage of it. This report from the ESRI that says that people in their 20s and 30s today, the first generation who are going to be poorer than the generation before them. If we set aside the politics of all this, I mean, that is a big problem for society, isn't it? To have this disenfranchised generation.
Oh, completely. I mean, I have two teenagers, Kieran. They're going to be wanting to be out in the world within the next 10 years. And, you know, I want to make sure that they can, you know, obviously get the education, but have an opportunity to buy a house, have an opportunity to get a good job, have an opportunity to do all the things that, you know, even despite the difficulties, we all manage to do it. It is a big concern. I think it's very sobering, not just for government, but for everybody when we look at that. And we have to see and find ways to make sure that that doesn't happen. So there's no lever that we shouldn't pull to make sure that the generation behind us comes up, because, you know, like there's a responsibility, I think, on every generation to ensure that the generation behind them has, you know, a good chance to succeed in life in every facet.
And listen, lots of people getting in touch on that on 53106. I am a 27-year-old trainee solicitor from South County Dublin. I've got a law degree and a master's in law. I have no pension and I live with my parents as I cannot afford Dublin rent. Why would I continue to vote for Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael when I am clearly getting shafted? I've lost all hope in this government, and I and many of my peers in South County Dublin will now be voting for Sinn Féin. We have been completely taken for granted and it is sickening. Another listener says, "Hi Kieran, a fellow Kilkenny woman here. I'm almost 35, still living with housemates. My boyfriend and I know that if we rent in Kilkenny, where the minimum rent is about 1,200 quid per month for a one or two bed apartment, we'll never be able to save for a deposit. We're now considering moving to Belfast so we can save and buy somewhere affordable. I am heartbroken at the thought of leaving home, my family and my friends, but we have no other option. Something needs to be done." Plenty of texts coming in along those lines. 53106, keep them coming. If you are in that generation that the ESRI says for the first time is going to be poorer and less well off than the generation before you. 1894 53106.